Guys, this is a history podcast.
Sure. Serious.
Let's talk presidents. In fact, let's talk all of them in order.
Yep.
Grant, amazing guy.
Great guy, amazing guy. I feel like his presidency was a bit of a fucking letdown for how cool he was.
I mean, he did so Christing much, this guy.
Oh, Grant. True. To help the South, he was pretty good.
What did he do?
Well, and he was. First of all, some people get on him because he owned one slave.
Oh, man.
Because his father-in-law, his wife's father,
yes,
hated him because he was an abolitionist. I mean, he wasn't like an active abolitionist,
sure,
but he was against just for not having a slave.
Yeah.
Back then, if you didn't have a slave, you were a dick to certain people. So
you were like, put on a mask.
Yeah.
You were that guy. You were like, why do you have slaves?
Yeah.
And they're like, why is this guy making me feel uncomfortable?
Yeah. So he hated him because he had slaves and he didn't want one. So he gave him one as a wedding present, like to spite him.
What a dick.
Yeah. So
Jesus.
So Grant made the guy his partner and they started a little business together, which he then freed the guy and gave him the business.
Yeah.
He would go
work with the slaves. But he'd be out there with them working.
Yeah.
While he was like financially ruined,
yeah,
he freed his slaves instead of selling them.
But he had one though?
I'm not sure. He might have had one at that point.
That's the story I just told you. Yeah. Is, I think, his slave story. I don't think he had a bunch of them.
He had one slave and he freed him instead of selling him.
But his father-in-law.
And he gave him a business that he had started with him.
Yeah, his father-in-law, history fucked him. He was like,
That's right.
Here's
slave. And then he was in the army.
Absolutely.
He was in the army and he went, one of his first jobs was outpost near San Francisco. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was in the desert of California. Mm. He was the only one there. And he was a family man. He loved his family.
He missed his bed.
Missed his family so much and he started just getting drunk. And somebody came to drop the mail and found him passed out drunk. And that was his only experience with alcohol. He was a very rigidly living guy. And he was known as a drunk for the rest of his life.
Really?
There's arguments.
Every time he had a political problem, they'd go, he's drinking.
There's arguments. There's rumors he was fucked up at Shiloh.
Because he sat under a tree in the rain. They found him sitting under a tree in the rain outside of a military hospital.
It also is funny because Shiloh, he woke up on day two of it.
Yeah.
At like the start of day two. Or maybe it was the start of day one when it started. He was late to get there. So everybody was like, he was hammered. But if he was hammered, that's very funny. To be like, oh shit, there's a war.
He had won the Civil War. Started really Reconstruction, he was in earnest wanting to get opportunities and equity for Black people, equal opportunity for Black people. And then he retired and was in New York. He became a New Yorker. He became a big part of this city.
Yeah.
And he had a son named Kermit, who I think his name was Kermit. That was the 1800s.
Yeah.
Sure.
So Kermit invested
what a fucking great name.
Invested his money and all of his father's money with some asshole guy who took it and just left town and just took all of their money, every penny that they had. And so Grant went to visit Vanderbilt, who's outside of the Grand Central Station. There's a great statue of him. I think it was Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Went to the richest man in New York City. Who was a hard ass, a guy who didn't care for charity or anything, but the sword that was Lee. Well, he had Robert E. Lee's sword that he surrendered to him.
What?
He had his Congressional Medal of Honor and the Bible that he took the oath of office in, and he gave them. He said, "I want to sell these to you because I have no money." And Vanderbilt said, Jesus Christ, Mr. President.
Dude. Holy shit.
We're not doing that. He said, I'm going to donate these to the National Museums, and I'll give you he bought them for the nation.
Did he buy his biography? Isn't that what he...
No, so here's what happened with the biography. It's the best part of his story, and it's actually his greatest legacy. But his autobiography is like the greatest ever written. Yeah. So... he met two guys on a train. He'd do anything for money at this point. His wife was very young. He was broke.
Two guys
after
on
everything
train.
He'd been through. He was broke and his wife was young and he was going to leave her destitute. So he met two guys on a train. They're like, why don't you write your autobiography? We'll pay you $1,000. And he was like, done.
What?
Oh,
so then about a week later, he meets up with Mark Twain was like his best friend. Mm. And Mark Twain said, why don't you write your autobiography, your memoirs? And he said, I'm doing that for these guys. And he goes, what are they paying you? And he goes, $1,000. And he's like, dude, what is wrong with you? And he says, give me the book. I'll publish. Because he Mark Twain had started his own publishing company because he hated publishers. He said, I'll publish it and I'll help you write it. And he said, I promise those two guys. He's like, did you sign something? He goes, no, but I did. I gave my word.
Fuck.
So Twain, or his real name, what's his name?
Clemens.
Clemens. Yeah. Goes, travels to, I think he went to see Sherman. He went to see, he's like, I need to see somebody who trusts, who, you know, he'll listen to. So he went to visit Sherman and said, please get him to do this. So Sherman wrote a telegram to Grant saying, for the love of God, give the book to Clemens. that's what the thing.
That's awesome.
So he wrote his autobiography, and the remarkable thing about it that I read was that there's like no adjectives in it. It's like all verbs and nouns. The entire book is verbs and nouns because he just says what happened. It's a very well-written book. And so Clemens turned it into this special edition that you had to order one. You could get any color you wanted. And it was the first blockbuster book in American history. It made like $500,000 in the first month. Meanwhile, he had a goiter that was growing and growing.
Three stogies. You always see him with the stogies?
Yeah. Died of throat cancer like right as he finished the book.
Whoa.
And then his wife was made for life. Her first check from Twain was like $400,000.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think he wasn't he buried here? And this monument.
And he's buried in Grant's tomb on the in Harlem. And when he died, there was this huge funeral, and it was Northern and Southern soldiers. Southern soldiers were allowed to put back on their Southern uniforms because it was a big thing that his casket was carried by North and South.
It's too bad you can never get away with wearing a Confederate uniform in Harlem these days.
No.
Because that would
get
be a
away
treat.
With.
Yeah, but he was fucking awesome at the when Lee surrendered. He was very like, I mean, it was unconditional surrender. Mm. So he was like, you guys are going to fucking give up. But he was like, keep your guns, go home, start rebuilding. Mm-hmm. Like, he could have fucking destroyed the South.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was very chill. I think Custer stole the fucking sword. He hated
Did
Custer.
He?
I think Custer stole Lee's sword.
Is
Maybe
that
he got
right?
it back. But I think the story was Grant wouldn't accept it or something along those lines.
Wanted him to keep it?
And
yeah, Custer was a bloodthirsty guy.
And then on the parade back into Washington, Grant was obviously out front. Custer fucking rode ahead. And Grant was like, this motherfucker. Custer was
with
the man.
With blonde hair.
If you look into Custer, he was pretty fucking cool.
I don't know much about him.
He fucked up Jeb Stuart at Gettysburg, which was pretty cool. Because Jeb was the man. And he rode in. He was with the Michigan Cavalry. And he was like, come on, you Wolverines. And fucking led him into a charge. That's why they're the Michigan Wolverines. Damn. All that shit.
So then you got Hayes, who undid all of this cool stuff for black people.
It's all
and politically,
very...
just he didn't want to deal with it. So he just did away with it. And then you got fucking, who else? Then it goes...
Garfield.
Then I get bleary.
Yeah, this is like the Gilded Age is what it's called. It's all shit.
Yeah.
But this is where shit, like, it goes from we ended slavery to now just right back into
just
racism.
Really?
Not slavery, but just every law against them.
Subjugation, it became the same obsession as before.
Yeah.
But without slavery, it just became all about not letting them vote, keeping them off the
And that goes ballot. All the way up until, like, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're
until just yesterday.
2018.
We figured it out
we
yesterday.
We figured it out yesterday. Thank God. Yeah. Finally,
today,
Arkansas.
We got a nice little nation.
Yeah. Louisiana cleaned up their act a little.
True.
And Alabama.
My favorite president, just jumping way the fuck ahead, is Nixon is my favorite.
Dude, he's awesome.
He's the best. And again, as a character.
Yes.
Nixon gave the country one great gift that I wish it was taught like the speech that Lincoln has on his monument and the ask not what your country and all that shit. The greatest thing that he did, because it speaks more to what Americans live, is that when Nixon was shamed and destroyed and had to leave office, he had to fucking resign. He had to give, after a couple of, I'm not a crook and this is all bullshit, he had to go and say, well,
right.
I'm going to go and...
Still not cook, but I'm going to get out of
here. Gerald Ford would take the oath of office at this time in this office. And he left. But before he left, he gave a speech to his staff, to the White House staff. It was impromptu. It was just on his way to the the helicopter. And he's just copiously crying in the speech. There's video of it that you can see. You have to try to find the whole thing because there's clips that you can find on YouTube. But I actually ordered from C-SPAN a DVD of the whole speech. And they're all bawling, the whole staff, and his family standing behind him. And he just tells them, look, don't. He's encouraging them. He said, this is a tough moment for all of us. He said, first of all, I don't want to discourage young people from being in public service. He was afraid of what has happened. Yes.
He was right.
He said, don't be discouraged from public office. It's a great calling. And he said, and for any mistakes that we made and all the everything that's happened, not one person in this administration, gained financially from anything, from being here, left richer than when they got here. He made it first, so he defended everybody that was there. And then he just starts reflecting. He reads from Teddy Roosevelt's autobiography, from his diary, when Teddy's wife and mother died at the same night. They both died of cholera or whatever on the same night. He was going from one room to the other.
Oh, yeah.
And they both died. And he was like 21 or something. And he wrote this quote that was like, the light has gone out and it'll be darkness forever. And he said, so he read it to his staff and he said, that's how he felt having lost his wife and his mom. And he went on and had this incredible life. So he's trying to say, don't be discouraged. Never be petty. Don't hate your enemies, because that's when you'd start to destroy yourself. He gets really introspective about everything that happened without talking about it. And then he says, it's horrible. He goes, they'll never write a book about my mother, but she was a saint. And I think of her, like one of his brothers had tuberculosis and they had no money. So she moved to Arizona where the air was better. And she was a nurse, a wet nurse. She nursed other people's babies for money in order that her son could live in Arizona. And he talks about his father, who was a lemon farmer, who had a failing lemon farm. And then he was a switchman on a streetcar. And he just talks about his parents and what they did for him and all that shit. He just cries. Oh, it's fucking beautiful. But it shows you a man at the height of American experience, destroyed from that height, which is the worst thing that can happen to a person, is to get that high and fall. And he just went, here's how this feels. He just told the world, this is how this feels. This is what this looks like.
Yeah.
And here's all I can say. And then he went and then he left. Incredible. I mean, he was one of the most influential people in American history.
Yeah. He ended Vietnam, right?
Yes.
That was already about done.
He was fucking Eisenhower's vice president.
There's a guy we know that's a bit of a conspiracy guy, mm-hmm. but he's been pretty correct on everything so far, and he's got a book coming out on Watergate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And about how that was a little darker than it seemed.
Like, so his opponents. Knew a guy back when I was first living in the city as a comedian. There was a guy named Frank Gannon who had
Gannon.
Frank Gannon wrote speeches for Nixon and was a very close friend of his. And weirdly, he became the guy who books the comedians on Letterman. And when I moved to New York back in 1990 or so, being on Letterman was all anybody wanted. So Gannon was the most important person in comedy at the time. And he was a strange guy who was very serious. And he would just come and he'd watch you. And if he liked you, he'd get Morty to come and maybe you'd be on the show. So he liked me. He never got me on the show. But he liked me. So I went to Letterman's office and met him. And I asked him about Nixon because he wrote, Nixon has one big biography called RN that Gannon co-wrote. And he told me that when you get a few drinks in Nixon, he says, the same people that got the Kennedys got me. It's the same people that got, he said it's the same machine.
Whoa.
That took out John and Robert Kennedy. Came after him. He said they just couldn't use bullets anymore because it was getting too. That's exactly what we said.
Yeah, yeah. We said that without him.
Watergate was. He said Watergate was something that happened all the time. It was just like, and still does. I mean, it's not like, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
it's, it's how things are done.
Yeah,
it's a safe with $1 million in it. What president doesn't have a safe with $1 million?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was.
So that's that's Nixon's story. That was Nixon's story. He didn't say it in public.
Sure.
Because the same as he conceded the presidency to Kennedy, which Kennedy stole. I mean, everyone knows that his father took suitcases of money to delegations and stole the presidency, and Nixon knew it, and he was like, "I'm not gonna. This is not good for the country to get into it." That's why he resigned instead of standing trial, and that's why he didn't talk about the. That's the story, you know.
Yeah. That's a good most interesting president.
Most interesting, I think, to me. Yeah. I mean, Johnson was also a fascinating guy.
Yeah.
Johnson was, and Reagan was kind of an empty-headed genius, incredible, knows how to just be. As long as somebody else is in the room, Reagan was brilliant. But I'm not sure he had any thoughts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's people like that.
Yeah. He was like an actor that was
He's
like,
an actor.
I guess I'll be a Republican while he was there. And then... Which was pretty admirable at the time because he was – actually, no, it wasn't because that was in the middle of the Red Scare. He was like one of the guys being like, you're a communist.
Yeah.
And he just became the man.
My favorite film of Reagan is Larry King interviewing him after he was shot and saying, so what do you feel about this guy? And he said, well, I just pray for him. He's a sick man. He's just – you know, I found out later that he's sick. He's mentally ill. So we add him to our prayers, and we hope him for the best for him. And he says it with this big
smile.
Like, we're fucking that guy up.
Yeah.
I hope he's doing good.
Yeah.
He's doing great.
Yeah.
I think that should be it, right?
Yeah. I think so. That's about enough.
You had fun.
Yeah, it was good. Why do you accusing me of having fun? Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks for doing it, man.
Sure. Thanks for asking. It's fun.
Goodbye.